Women's Shiur Sunday afternoon in Shara Bechina. Sunday, Tez, what's today? Yud Zion Teves. Oh, because last week there wasn't a Shiur. So whenever we miss a week, the next week, statistics show that the week after there's no Shiur or a missed Shiur for whatever reason, the numbers drop precipitously. We don't know why. It's some sort of. Okay, let's go. Yeah, or you know, it becomes not part of the daily schedule. Okay, let's go. We're learning Chavos Al Dov Shiur HaBechina, and maybe again, I always like to spend the first few minutes urging everybody not to become bored. These things have to be repeated again and again and again, and it's not good if you say, well, we know this already, and stop already, and enough already, and we heard enough already, because it's not true. As the Chavos Al Dov writes in the beginning of Shiur HaBechina, he writes that a huge problem of the human condition is that it takes. When we get to the text, I'll tell you where we're up to. Now I'm giving like a hakdama to make the text more meaningful. So the reason it pays to repeat these things again and again and again is because the Chavos Al Dov writes in his hakdama to Shiur HaBechina that the reason it is so necessary to learn about these things and to repeat them over and over and over is because the human being takes a very short time to take something for granted. You could have the greatest thing in the world happen to you, and you're so full of thanks, and you're dancing in the street, and 2 days later, 3 days later, it just becomes part of your life, and you take it for granted. Kol Shekein, these things that we're talking about, which is the biology of the human body, which the Chavos Al Dov says is the greatest way to practice Bechina, to practice examination of nature, and thus to recognize A, Hashem's existence, Hashem's reality, and B, to give thanks to Hashem, to feel gratitude, which sets the stage for Shiur Avodas Elokim. He says the greatest place to practice that and the most close to us is our bodies. You know, he could talk about any of the seven disciplines he talked about. He could talk about zoology, plant life, astronomy, physics, chemistry, he can talk about so many other things, history, Torah, and he says, I'm going to talk only about one of the many things to talk about, and that's biology, because it's so close to us. However, this magnifies the problem that he says, that we take it for granted, especially since we're born with all of these systems working. So when we get used to it, when before our brain has matured, before we have matured, so we're already taking it for granted. And by the time of someone becomes 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years old or 10 years old, it's too late. Right? He doesn't think about his digestive system. He doesn't think about his breathing. He doesn't think about his brain. He doesn't think about the thousands of cells, the millions of cells that are in his body. He doesn't think about how the blood is delivering nutrition to every part of the body, exactly the nutrition that it needs, and carrying away the waste. He don't think of these things. So that's why the Chavos Al Dov says the only way to combat this, but this is our primary obligation of Avodas Hashem, to say Baruch Ato Hashem, to thank Hashem. When we daven, the primary davening is thanking Hashem and feeling that Hashem is supplying us with what we need. And therefore, Bechina is first. After Shiur HaYichud, which tends to be a bit more philosophical, as the Chavos Al Dov himself says, the next is Shiur HaBechina, because this is maybe the primary obligation of a person. And if it takes repeating over and over again, that we have to be amazed about how our kidneys work and how the pancreas works and how the digestive system works and how the eyes work and how the ears work, and so you have to keep repeating it, because that's the only way that we don't take it for granted. I mean, another way to not take it for granted is to take a daily trip to the hospital and to visit people where the systems don't work. And you say, you have plenty of, you go to hospitals, and although 95% of the population is fine, but go visit blind people, go visit people whose digestive system doesn't work, go, right? And so then you realize how thankful we have to be. So, and the only way to combat it is to say it again and again and again. Because we don't lapse into just taking it for granted. You know, and we said, for example, when we say Modim Anachnu Loch in Shmoneh Esrei, Rabbi Bigdamila Zatzal suggests, think about one thing. Don't think about, oh Hashem, thank you for everything. That's cheap. Think about one thing. Say, thank you Hashem for my nose. Thank you Hashem. And really the nose has so many nisim involved with it, because it's the ability to smell and the ability to breathe. So that's two different things. So say, take one thing every day. Or you say, V'chol ha'chayim yadu chasela. All living creatures, we say this, whenever we daven Shmoneh Esrei. We say, V'chol ha'chayim yadu chasela. All living creatures praise you forever. And it just slides off our tongue. And but why? Why do all living things praise Hashem forever? Because there is no end to recognizing the... And Anachon Maspikim, Lahodus Lacha Hashem Elokeinu V'Elokei Avoseinu Alachas Mei Olaf Elaf Alfi Alafim V'Ribei Revavos Poamim Hatovos She'osisu Mavoseinu V'Imonu. And that's just, there's no end. You spend your whole lifetime, and he holds you should spend your whole lifetime. And you have to make it a chiddush, because you have to feel gratitude. This is all a waste of time, pardon the expression, if we just pay lip service to this. Gratitude is chovas halvados. You have to feel grateful. It's not just a question of, Baruch Adonai Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Pokeach Ivrim, you gave me sight. And Matir Asurim, I could move. I'm not paralyzed. Zokev Kefufim, Roka Aretz Alamoyim, Anosim LaYoev Koach, the miracle that we wake up in the morning and we're rested. Except if we have small babies, I guess. But usually we wake up in the morning and we're rested. Well, if you have small babies, you're not waking up in the morning. You're waking up all night. But we're rested. And that's a miracle. And you say, thank you, Hashem. And you have to feel grateful, not just say it. There's no point in saying it. Almost no point. I say almost no point because if we're obligated to make a bracha, we make a bracha. But it's such a waste. Like we say in Uvah Letzion, we say, Leman lo niga lo rik. We ask Hashem that we don't waste, we don't waste our kochos. What does it mean, waste your kochos? You're getting up and you're davening and you're snatching time to daven, and then you don't utilize davening for what it's meant for, to develop that feeling of gratefulness, of gratitude, and to say, V'chol ha'chayim yadu chasela, and to feel that way. Yeah, me too. I can eternally praise Hashem. So you say, for what? If you don't learn Shara HaBechina, you go over to someone and you say, well, what do you want to praise Hashem for? You say, for Kol HaChayim, you do Chasela. Are you part of Kol HaChayim? Yeah, I guess so. I'm alive. So you do Chasela means forever. Praise Hashem forever. What are you praising Hashem for? And he's stuck. But if you go to Shara HaBechina class, so now you say, I'm praising Hashem for my nose, and for my teeth, and for my tongue, and for my sight, and then it's just one sliver of thanks, because that's what the Chavis HaLodah said he decided to focus on. He decided to focus on the human body, because hopefully that's the area where we're closest. If we tell people, I want you to think about the amazing chesed of gravity, and how it allows us to live in this world, and where would we be without? And it's a miracle. It's a nace. It's a creation. Hashem created the force of gravity. If it wouldn't be gravity, it would be very hard. So, and everything else. But he says, I'm going to pick the human body because that's the closest to us, and that's the easiest. But I guess it's also the easiest to take for granted. As I'm saying, because we grew up with it, we were born with it, we were born with the systems functioning. So that's why I beg of you not to get bored because the Chaim Salvavus holds this is the primary avoda of a person to develop a bechina and to say and to be constantly. Right? We say in modem. Your rachamim never ceases. Your favors to us, your bestowing kindness to us, never ends. The Olam Kivinu Lach, the Al Kulam Yisparach, Yisramam Shemchom Al Kina Tamid Yilam Ba'ed, B'chol HaChayim Yidu Chasela, the Hanalu Eshemcha B'yames, Hakel Yeshua Seinu, Ve'ezra Seinu Sela. You have to think, wow, he really is. So, that's why we're learning this, and I thought about skipping and going much faster, and we are going faster, but really, it has to be banged into us, because this is the primary Avodas Hashem. It also should be realized, and I know I'm taking time because, like I say, there's no point in saying B'chol HaChayim B'du Chasela if you're not mentally attuned to what it means and including yourself in it. So, as much as it's great that we're learning Chavis Halvav Shar HaBechina, but we need this constant kick in the pants, so to speak, to remind us that what we're doing, what we're developing. Now, remember, the Chavis HaLavos doesn't write everything he knew. Right? He's not writing a science book here, or a biology book. He just touches upon certain things. In some places he's a little myrich, a little, but he always says there's much more than he wrote. And in some places he just eyes, ears, tongue, he just says the words. So he didn't write everything, and Kol Shekein, we're 1,000 years later, and we know it's almost infinitely much more complex and complicated and mesudar and amazing and miraculous than he realized. But this is what we're supposed to do. Now, someone who's capable of delving into it and delving into the, we'll just talk about biology now. Just this, someone who's capable of it has an obligation to, because that person will feel more gratitude to Hashem and be more obligated to serve Hashem, will feel more gratitude and will be more amazed and will be more cognizant of the niflaos of the world, which reflect Hashem's creation and creates a sense of gratitude in us. So the more you can delve into move the more you can delve into it. Well, you go to the person and say, you know, you could smell things with your nose. Did you ever think about that? How wonderful that is, and it lets you know if food is spoiled. And stam the hanah of smelling. Whoever thought, you know, flowers and basamim, and you know, it's a whole world in itself. Okay, but then if you are able to study how that works, and the system in the body and how it's connected to the brain and how it could bring back memories from 20 years ago when you were in a certain situation and you had that smell, and you know, that's the miracle of memory. So you have to do that. You can't. So the more educated you are, the more you're mechuyev, obligated to delve into it as much as you can. The Chaim Salvavus delved into it much, much more than what he wrote here. That's obvious. Because you can't write what he wrote unless you know much more. And you have to build on the things we're learning about, and you have to, and you'll be more of an Eved Hashem. Because an Eved Hashem, according to the Chavis Halvavos, can be summed up as, I owe it all to you, Hashem, everything I have is from you. And the more you recognize that you have, the more things you recognize come from Hashem, the more Kaniya you have. That's what he writes about in Shar HaKaniya, the Shar talking about how we have to humble ourselves to Hashem, and so that's being an Eved Hashem. That's what he explains there. Eved Hashem doesn't mean running the 3-minute mile, even though it seems like we're doing it every Friday before lich benching. That's not an Eved Hashem. An Eved Hashem means that you're grateful to Hashem for everything he gives you, and you recognize that everything is from him. That's the Chavis HaLavos' definition of an Eved Hashem. That's what he writes about in Shara Avodas Elokim. We're beside ourselves, not knowing how to say thank you to Hashem for all he does for us. And that's, and the more Eved Hashem we are, the more we'll be grateful, and the more things we'll be grateful for. And again, okay. And each thing he talks about, you have to thank Hashem for. You can't say thanks for everything. That's cheating. And you don't really mean it then. But you pick something to thank Hashem for, and you study it and think about it. And that's why we say, Kol Atzmai Yisai Tomar Na Hashem B'Yichamocha. Now your bones can't talk. So we have to talk for the bones. That's what it means. Now a man, nowadays a woman to a certain degree also, and the Chavis lists this in his list of seven things. In Chazal, and in the Rambam, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, in the Yad HaChazaka, which is the Rambam's massive Halacha Sefer, maybe the Yad HaChazaka it's called, the Rambam reflects the Chavis Halvavus' approach that the way to develop Ahavas Hashem and Yiras Hashem is through studying nature. He doesn't talk about biology, he rather talks about nature and astronomy and physics, like how the world works, the Gadol. That's what the Rambam focuses on. But the idea that you study nature and you develop Avas Hashem is in the Rambam. Interestingly, perhaps curiously, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvos, in the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, talks about learning Torah and developing Avas Hashem through learning Torah, because Torah is like a whole world in itself. Torah covers the whole gamut of human existence. And it's Hashem wants you to act this way and wants you to act that way. And it's not just about getting up in the morning and washing Nagelwasser and davening. It's everything. Everything in the world is connected to Torah. And it, as a person like learns through Shas, which you're not about to do, even though there are women that do it nowadays, you can join up with them. Just don't say I said that.
No.
As you go through Shas, Torah is Torah. Torah covers everything. A chair, a table, plant life is Seder Zeroim. Time is covered by Seder Moed. Human relationships, torts, Noshim, Nezikin, Kachim is the Beis HaMikdash, Taharos is purity, we don't even know. Tumataro, we don't even, can't even relate to that anymore, except in one area where it's not really Tumah V'Tahara, but it's really Issa V'Heter in our lives. But it's really Tumah V'Tahara also. And it's the whole world. It covers the whole world. So there's, and really, there's the physical world, which you can study biology and astronomy and zoology and plant life and how everything works. And you spend your whole life studying the human eye, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then in Torah, you could do the same thing. In any area of the world, any area of life, any area of existence, Torah covers it. The Torah gives rules for how Hashem wants you to relate to it in a spiritual way. And well, women are not mechuyev to do that, but a man is. But I'm just... What Torah is everything I just said, but on the spiritual plane, P-L-A-N-E, on the spiritual level. In other words, there's the physical level, how the mouth works, how speech works. And then there's the spiritual level, what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say, and davening, and these, right, and the connection of the mouth to the mind in the spiritual way, because you have to daven with kavana. And as overwhelmingly complex and amazing the physical world, it's at least double. It's really more than double, but it's doubled by the spiritual world, which covers all of those things as a spiritual entity. The eye is a spiritual entity. And what do we mean when we say Vayar Hashem and Hashem saw? Then Hashem doesn't have an eye, he doesn't see. So that means the power of sight is a spiritual koach also, because Hashem sees. So seeing doesn't mean physical seeing, it means spiritual seeing, being aware, knowing, acting upon, internalizing. Seeing could mean all those things. And so Torah is, it's really a little sacrilegious to say it's as complex, because it's much more complex, because the spiritual world is so much more than the physical world. As much as the physical world is, in the spiritual world there's so many levels of Kedusha, so many levels of Malachim, so many levels of Ruchnius. This world is like the lowest. We're rock bottom, right? But that's the greatness of Hashem, that He created this physical world, but all the other worlds are spiritual worlds. So there's really, in learning Shaar HaBechina, I feel I should speak out that the Rambam and the Sefer, why the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvahs chose to say that the reason, the way to reach Ahavas Hashem is through learning Torah and seeing the complexity and how everything fits and how everything works and how it's perfect and how it interrelates and how it creates the perfect world and how it, it's just amazingly complex and it all fits and it all works, etc., etc. And that's, and you reach Avos Hashem, you say, wow, Hashem is like utterly amazing, and it's so, and in the Yad HaChazakah he chooses the Chavis HaLovus's approach, and he says the way to reach Avos Hashem is to study nature. I don't know. Chazal talk about the Rambam's way of learning Torah. That's how you reach Avos Hashem. Because the pasuk says, "V'ohav to es Hashem Elokecha b'chol lebo b'chol b'chol nafshecha b'chol miyodecha," and then Chazal interpret the pasuk to say, "How do you reach that?" "V'hayu hadvarim ha'ele asher anochi mitzavecha hayom al levavecha," which is, means Torah, studying about Hashem, studying Torah. But the Rambam, as really, as you would say, the Rambam, the Chavis HaLovus preceded the Rambam by 2 centuries. We reach Avos Hashem by studying nature. So that's, I don't know, that's like an interesting aside almost. Okay, let's go back to the words, to the text of the Chavis HaLovus. And in the text of the Chavis HaLovus, we're up to, he's running through the body and he's just throwing out words, the parts of the body, and we're up to Vahaloshon, the tongue. Vahaloshon litom bohamat amim. He talks about the tongue as having the sense of taste, containing the sense of taste. You have it? This time I know we're up to here because I marked it down. Oh, that's the. That's the. Maxwell has his brother. As we call it. Yeah. We're on page 196 with the English translation. In the paragraph that starts with the word V'achar Kain, the fourth line of that paragraph is V'haloshon, and the tongue, V'haloshon litom bohamat amin, the tongue with which to taste. Okay, now tasting, again, Shaar HaBechina, tasting does two things. The idea that it tastes, and it tastes good, or it tastes bad, tasting arouses our desire to eat. Hashem, people don't take care of their cars properly, they don't take care of their tape recorders properly, they don't take care of their computers properly, right? The manufacturer gives us a booklet how to take care of it, and we don't, right? We don't take care, we don't dust it, we don't oil the car often enough, we don't make an oil change often enough, and we don't take care of it. But what would be if you don't take care of your body? We would starve to death, right? We wouldn't eat, we're too busy to eat. So Hashem gave 2 chasodim to ensure that that doesn't happen. One is that we get hungry, which he's not talking about here yet. That's a chesed Hashem, that we get hungry. Imagine if your car, right, if it was running low on gears, so your car, ow, more gears. They probably do make such a car, right, that starts beeping when it runs low on gears. So your body, when it's running low on fuel, your body has a built-in system called hunger, and you feel hungry. And hunger is a message to the brain that it's time to eat. That's one thing. But also tasting does that. In other words, we're encouraged to eat. We're encouraged to eat when we taste something good, so that encourages us to eat. Unfortunately, it encourages us to eat sometimes when we don't have to eat. Then it's an asayon. But also the tongue plays a part, the tasting plays a part in the actual digestive process. Now, it says, when we eat something tasty, the digestive juices in the mouth and the stomach begin flowing in anticipation. The taste entices you to eat, and it creates also that the juices start flowing already, and they prepare, it's like your makabel and orech, you get ready to prepare for the guest. And he points out, Rabbi Avigdor Miller points out, that as soon as a person fills his stomach, he loses the desire to eat, even though the digestive process has just begun, and the nourishment has not reached the parts of his body that need it. But when the stomach is full, a signal is sent to his brain to shut down his appetite. And then, till he needs more, and then he gets an appetite again. The tongue helps in the process of making food more desirable, and thereby encourages people to eat. It does so by measuring food quality using the miraculous power of taste. How does it do this? The tongue is able to experience taste by means of very tiny sensitive organs called taste buds, of which the average person has about 10,000. 10,000 taste buds. The taste buds send messages to the brain describing the taste of the food to which they're exposed. Now I'm reading from Wikipedia. There's four common tastes that the tongue: sweet, sour, bitter, and salty. A fifth taste, I don't know, called UMAMI. Anyone ever hear of that? The sweet, sour, bitter, salty, and a fifth taste called umami. I don't know. I never heard of it. Results from tasting glutamate present in MSG. I guess they're eating Chinese food. Yeah. The tongue has many nerves that help detect and transmit taste signals to the brain. I'm reading now from Wikipedia. Because of this, all parts of the tongue can detect these four common tastes. The commonly described taste map of the tongue is not true. It doesn't exist, that there's different parts of the tongue for different tastes. There's salty, sweet, sour, and bitter. A very maneuverable and pliable arrangement of muscle. It helps to remove and dislocate food particles in the teeth and shifts, because it helps in digestion and in shoving the food down, and shifts food around in the mouth in order to assist. There's another thing it does besides tasting. It shifts food around in the mouth in order to assist with the all-important act of swallowing. The act of swallowing food, which at this place in the system is called a bolus, B-O-L-U-S, brings many organs into action. As the top of your tongue presses up against the hard palate, the roof of your mouth, food is shoved to the back of your mouth. Okay, then a bundle of muscles extend from the floor of the mouth to form the tongue. The upper surface of the tongue is covered with tiny bumps called papillae. These contain tiny pores that are our taste buds. Three pairs of salivary glands secrete saliva, which contains a digestive enzyme called amylase, A-M-Y-L-A-S-E, that starts the breakdown of carbohydrates even before food enters the stomach. Okay, so that's...
Something else that sounds that I just discovered. When a person eats something very cold and gets brain freeze, they say if you press your tongue up against the top palate, it sends a message to the brain or something, and it prevents you from getting that terrible headache.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Now the truth is that smell is a huge part of taste also. When we're chewing, the food releases chemicals that immediately travel up into the nose and trigger smell sensors in it. The smell sensors work together with taste buds to create the combined mental picture of a food's flavor. That's for sure. If you can't smell, if you have a stuffed nose or something, then the taste is very schwach, very weak. The taste is nowhere near. It doesn't have as much flavor. Okay. Now, okay. Then the Chavis HaVavah says, Yeshbo Imzen, this is what we just read about, really. Ezer, not only is it tasting, but it helps lahavir hamachol v'hamishte, to move along the food and the drink into the right direction. Rabbi Miller says that the word for tongue is derived from the word losh, to need, loshon, and it's to need, K-N-E-A-D. The tongue needs the food in the mouth together with saliva. In this way, the food is moved back and forth between the front and back teeth until it's sufficiently chewed and can be swallowed. The front teeth, and we're about to learn about the teeth, cut and tear the food, and the back teeth grind it. Food may need to be moved back and forth a few times until it's adequately pre-digested and fully mixed with saliva. When it's prepared in this way, the food becomes like a paste that can slide down to the stomach through the esophagus. In chewing, the tongue holds the food against the teeth. Okay, and in swallowing, the pressure of the tongue closes the opening of the windpipe so that we don't choke on the food as it goes down. The tongue is a remarkable organ, which is all muscle, something like the heart muscle. It's able to twist and turn and assume almost any shape, so that it can perform its many functions. Because the tongue has a rough surface, it also offers abrasive action, which is useful for cleaning the teeth and the gums from food particles which may stick in the mouth. If the tongue were perfectly smooth, it wouldn't be as efficient. The roughness of the tongue is achieved by the little bumps that house the taste buds. Thus, all of the many functions of the tongue are interrelated and cooperative. The tongue has been efficiently designed to achieve its many functions, all of which are vital. So we thank Hashem for the great gift of the tongue. The tongue is also a security guard at the entrance to the mouth, which we can compare to a secret government facility that must be protected from unauthorized visitors. The tongue stands guard and inspects any food that appears at the entrance. Working in conjunction with the sense of smell, it seeks to recognize food that is rotten or harmful. Such foods can often be identified by taste or by the way they feel to the tongue, like fish bones. If the food doesn't taste good or is recognized as harmful, it's rejected and the tongue helps spit it out. Unfortunately, some eateries may be tempted to disguise rotten food with spices and flavorings, hoping to deceive the tongue. When the food gets into the stomach recognizes the food for what it is and acts to eject it immediately. In that case, instead of the food going forward in the normal way, which is a miracle, the organs involved in swallowing swing into reverse, another miracle, and the food is vomited out. Sometimes the food is so disguised that it gets down into the intestine, where it's finally recognized. To prevent it from causing any further harm, it's rushed out in the other direction and is evacuated as loose stool or diarrhea. We see that the body has many guards working in cooperation. The tongue is one of their guards, as is the nose. Food that doesn't smell right is rejected by the conscious mind before it even gets near the mouth. This is all a nace. We continue, Vahashinayim lilos hamachol. Teeth, chew the food. You can't eat without chewing your food. We learned, by the way, about the role of the tongue and the teeth in the speech process that we learned in previous weeks. Now we're learning the chewing function of the teeth is in addition to the important role of the teeth in the speech process. Right, the many, many consonants we would not be able to articulate if not for the teeth. But now we're talking about that they chew. Now going back to the Wikipedia or wherever I got this from. The teeth are the gears to demolish chunks of food by a series of actions such as clamping, slashing, piercing, grinding, and crushing. The teeth do the first drastic destruction to the food into the digestive system. There are several types of teeth. Incisors, are the square or sharp-edged teeth in the front of the mouth, four in the bottom, four on top. On either side of the incisors are the sharp canines. The upper canines are sometimes called eye teeth or cuspids. Behind the canines are the premolars. There are two sets or four premolars in each jaw. The molars situated behind the premolars have points and grooves. There are 12 molars, three sets in each jaw, called the first, second, and third molars. The third molars are the wisdom teeth. Okay, and okay, because they can crowd out other teeth and cause problems like pain and infection. Okay, somebody have to take care of that. Human teeth are made up of four types of tissue: pulp, dentin, enamel, and cementum. And those, we're talking about what the tooth was made out of to help it do what it does. The pulp is the innermost portion of the tooth and consists of connective tissue, nerves, and blood vessels which nourish the tooth. The pulp has two parts: the pulp chamber, which lies in the crown, and the root canal, which is the root of the tooth. Everybody shakes their head over the root canal. Blood vessels and nerves enter the root through a small hole in its tip and extend through the canal into the pulp chamber. Amazing. Dentin surrounds the pulp, a hard yellow substance that makes up most of the tooth and is as hard as bone. It's the dentin that gives teeth their yellowish tint, which we don't want them to have. Enamel, the heart, is the hardest tissue in the body. Covers the dentin and forms the outermost layer of the crown. It enables the tooth to withstand the pressure of chewing and protects it from harmful bacteria and changes in temperature from hot to cold foods. Both the dentin and the pulp extend into the root. A layer of cementum covers the outside of the root under the gum line and holds the tooth in place within the jawbone. Cementum is also as hard as bone. Okay, and that's book Dr. Stern. You want to know more about the teeth? Okay, let's go right to the lips. The Hasfasayim. The Chavis Halvavas' view of the lips, besides what they do in speech, we saw that. La'akev hamishte, to retain liquid so that it shouldn't drip out. You know, you would either, your lips open and close, so you would choke whenever you tried to take a drink from a bottle or cup. Either too much of the liquid would pour in and there would be no way of controlling it effectively. You would have to guess. But the lips clamp down at every gulp to control the intake and accept only the amount of liquid that the throat can tolerate. They don't open up again until the person is ready for the next sip. Even with lips, if the lips were too stiff or too pliable, either way, they're perfect. If they were too stiff or too pliable, one would not be able to control the flow of liquid and his throat would be overwhelmed. Taking a drink would be a most excruciating experience because the person would be choked by the liquid. The lips are flexible and firm enough so that they can close up as needed to control the drinking process. The lips are also essential parts of the speech process and are involved in articulating both vowels and consonants. Besides the functions that the Chavis Halvavas mentions, we will add, Rabbi Avigdor Miller says, the function, the value of the lips in helping a person keep his mouth closed. Without lips, the mouth would never really be closed tightly, and there would always be a temptation to continue talking. As David HaMelech says, right, Amarti Eshmera Drochai Mechato Bilashoni Eshmera Lefi Machsom. I will put a muzzle on my tongue, and that's the lips. It is best to just lock one's lips together and say nothing. Chavis Halvavas says that in many places. He believes very strongly in the value of just keeping silent. If someone insults you, just put your two lips together like a muzzle, and that closes your mouth. Similarly, Shlomo HaMelech suggests two methods for watching speech: the lips and the tongue. Shomer piv ulashono. Piv is the lips, the mouth. Shomer mitzoros nafsho. If you guard your tongue and your lips, your mouth and your tongue, that's how we would translate it, you keep out of trouble. Shomer mitzoros nafsho. Well, physically, the brain controls it. The brain commands it. The brain controls all of the body. But this is what Hashem created. These are the gates. These are the gates. You need a person to shut the gates, but these are the gates. There are gates. And if you could just start talking, it would be that much easier, says the Chavis of Olas, to start talking. But if you have to open your lips, then maybe you have a chance to think first. Like when on Justin Zufruf, I don't know if anybody was here, you know, Justin, my friend Justin, who got married, and he was here by Uzo, he spoke. He spoke to the shul, and he said that he could only find an apartment, which was on the fourth floor, and there's an elevator. So at first he felt, he's like, oh. But then he realized that Hashem is such amazing chesed that he has a chance to think first before he goes into his house. He doesn't just walk into his house and start talking. He has a chance to reflect because he's waiting for the elevator. So he says he realizes the chesed Hashem that he gave him an elevator, an apartment that he needs the elevator, and there's an elevator, so he has a chance to think. So that's what the Chavis of Olas is saying about lips. You have to open your lips to talk, and the Chazal want you to be quiet, keep quiet as much as possible. So you have to open. So you have that. We're not aware of it because, again, like it's automatic. But if we realize it, that our lips are closed, my lips are sealed. We said, right? Okay, let's continue a little, a few more words at least. He says, "V'chein b'shor eivorim toalos." All other organs. They all have benefits. I'm not going through every organ in your body, says the Chavis of Olas. Mitzosam yuduo, some of the functions we know. Umitzosam einan yuduo slano. And some of them we don't know. Now, the tonsils, Rav Avigdor Miller says, there was a time when medical experts concluded that the tonsils have no purpose. They're vestigial organs left over from a former phase of evolution. Whenever a child had an infection in the tonsils or the slightest excuse, they immediately removed the tonsils. There were millions of unnecessary tonsillectomies each year. Subsequently, it has been learned that the tonsils serve an important function in the body. The two tonsils are oval lymph glands sitting at the back end of the throat, one on each side. They continuously monitor the quality of the air, food, and water that enter our body. From this vantage point, they're able to play a major role in the body's immunity mechanism. They form white blood cells, which protect our body as a defense mechanism. They trap the germs that enter the body, draining them into the lymphatic system for elimination. They kill bacteria that enter from the bloodstream. Removing tonsils because they're inflamed is like removing the liver because now it has a problem. It's an essential organ. You don't remove it, you heal it. Similarly, we now treat tonsillitis with medication so that the tonsils are preserved to continue performing the function that Hashem designed for them. So we need to understand that even though we don't know the full purpose of some organs, you have to give the Rabbanu Shalom the benefit of the doubt. Let's say you open the hood of a car and you see a screw. You say, what's that screw there for? Let's throw it away. We don't need that screw. That's absurd, right? People that build cars don't put a screw in there for no reason. And you would be very foolish to throw it out. Every part's necessary. We trust the engineers that built the car that they know what they're doing. They didn't put an extra screw in there for no reason. If they demonstrated an ability to design a car, we assume they're not fools or idiots, and they didn't put anything unnecessary in the car. All the more so, we trust Hashem, the ultimate engineer who designed the world. Even though we don't understand why he did certain things, we can be sure that everything in the body was of the utmost necessity. At one time, there were 180 features of the body that were said to be vestigial and no longer needed. Today, all those claims have evaporated because as medical knowledge expanded, the functions of the hitherto unexplained phenomena became clear. At one time, scientists claimed that what happens in development of the embryo is a reflection on the supposed animal origins of mankind, which is ridiculous. Everything in the body has been discovered to have an important function. As scientists learn more about the body, they realize that each organ has many functions, with new functions identified each day. Of course, due to the depth of wisdom in the design of the body, there are functions that will never be fully understood. How can a human being know what a sublime engineer has in mind? There was a time when doctors wanted to remove the four parathyroid glands, which are located on the back surface of the thyroid gland. They believed those glands to be superfluous, but did not realize that the parathyroid glands regulate the calcium level in our bodies within a very narrow range so that the nervous and muscular systems can function properly. Without these glands, a person would be effectively crippled. So we have a better appreciation of Yoducha Hashem, Kol Ma'asecha V'Chasidecha Yivarchucha. We thank Hashem for every organ, and we never stop thanking Him, and we don't want to be like those who make light of one of the organs, saying there's no need for it. Chas v'shalom. So okay, we'll continue now, and next, Mr. Hashem, we'll go back to next week.